From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, open lines. Here's what's happening. The deaths of four children in hot cars in recent days has brought the number across the United States this year to at least 23, nearly matching the total of all of last year and prompting experts to plead for vigilance and warn parents that it can happen to anyone. Folks, this is all over the country. It is getting very hot this summer. Please do not leave your children in the car whenever you go shopping or wherever you go. Hillary Clinton took a historic step closer Tuesday night to fulfilling her dream of shattering what she once called the highest, hardest glass ceiling when Democratic delegates at the party's national convention in Philadelphia officially nominated her as their candidate for president, making the former First Lady, U.S. Senator, and Secretary of State the first woman to top a major party presidential ticket. Joe Gomez, our national correspondent in Philadelphia, a momentous night and day, Joe.
Well, it was a very dramatic day, George. Let me tell you.
I think we may have lost you, Joe. I think we did. Cell phone there. Oh, well. Well, she will accept the nomination Thursday night. Of course, Dr. John Curtis has been with us since the beginning of all these primaries. John, your reaction to today's work?
Well, I think that anybody watching this, you know, has to be moved a little bit. I mean, if you look at that audience, George, and you saw the hysteria, the crying, this, you know, the tears flowing down their cheeks, it reminded me of like a Orwellian sort of 10 minutes hate thing. I mean, not that it was hateful. I mean, people were genuinely, you know, infatuated in love with Hillary Clinton, you know, breaking the ceiling. But, you know, Bill Clinton's speech was almost inexplicable other than basically trying to humanize his wife for 50 minutes, talking about every detail of his courtship with her, how madly in love he is with this woman, and of course nothing about Monica Lewinsky, the impeachment, and all of the disgrace that he brought the Oval Office. But it was an attempt. I felt like I was being sold like an Edsel or something. The guy was selling his heart out about his wife, which I guess is appropriate at these kind of things. But the other side of it is you have a convention that has this dark cloud over it of this conspiracy and corruption that went on at the highest levels of the DNC to essentially disenfranchise the runner-up in this convention. And Bernie Sanders has sort of drunk the Kool-Aid now and is just in the Stop Trump movement, essentially, not really being honest with anybody as to people that, you know, blood, sweat, and tears and cash to the tune of $180 million went into this man's campaign for nothing that was fixed from the get-go with Wasserman Schultz basically orchestrating this. And the DNC completely whitewashes this. So what you have here is they can rip and bash Trump all they want in this convention, but anybody with a set of eyes is seeing what has taken place over the last few days, and it's pretty disturbing.
It sure is. John, we'll talk to you tomorrow night. Howard Bloom, of course, continues to monitor what's been going on at the Democratic National Convention. Howard, your take on today?
Well, John got one thing right, and that is it was moving. Not only did you see people in the audience with tears in their eyes, I must have had tears in the corners of my eyes very carefully hidden at least four times. The speech by Bill Clinton, I've never watched an entire speech by Bill Clinton before in my life. He is powerful, and what he was saying is not how he loved his wife. What he was doing is giving story after story after story about the fact that his wife, Hillary, is a compulsive problem solver, that no matter where you land her, she will find a situation that needs improvement. She will talk to the people involved in that situation. She'll get a handle on how to put things together and change them for the better. And then she will step in and do it because that's what she does. That's what's built into her bones. So first of all, you had a convention that delivered what Donald Trump promised but never was able to do. A star-studded convention. The people talking tonight included Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Meryl Streep, Alicia Keys, Lena Dunham.
Oh, they were all there.
Yeah, Eric Holder, Madeleine Albright, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Barbara Boxer, two generals and two chiefs of police, along with the mothers of six black kids, unarmed, who have been killed through these problems that we've been having between the police and the black community. She brought police chiefs together with the mothers of the kids who have died, and they seem to agree that the trick is not to pit these communities against each other, it's to get a future where police officers and communities work together. And then there were powerful stories. There was the first responder who had gone to 9/11 and had helped pull out first survivors, and there was one of the survivors there who'd been burned over 82% of her body and wasn't expected to survive, and survived anyway with help from Hillary Clinton, who came to her hospital room and took her hand and gave her confidence in her ability to heal. But the first responder was told by, as all of them were, was told by the Environmental Department under George Bush that there was nothing toxic in the air above Ground Zero. And it wasn't until several years later that all of the first responders began to come down with hideous problems caused by the stuff, the toxins they'd been breathing. And everybody wanted to forget them, except Hillary Clinton, who went to bat for them, who took them individually through the halls of Congress and the Senate and introduced them to individual politicians, and worked and worked and worked until she got money for the health care for these people who had done so much for us. And that is typical. They gave at least 27 different stories of this kind of jumping in where there's a problem and where nobody else is interested, and solving the problem and taking things forward. And they made a basic point about what it means to be an American, that to be an American, you don't go backwards to America's greatness in the 1950s or the 1960s. You are constantly trying to perfect this union, in which all men and women are created equal and have certain inalienable rights. And every generation has to find its way a step forward toward perfecting that union and those ideals. And that's what this convention tonight was about.
Howard, we'll talk to you tomorrow as well. And to complete the round robin for tonight, we go back to our national correspondent, Joe Gomez. Joe, tell me about the electricity at the convention today. How was it?
It was all catching, I think, in the bowl of the convention itself, especially during the roll call vote when Bernie Sanders did the unusual move to scrap procedural rules and actually called for a voice vote of Hillary Clinton. I think you could hear an audible gasp in the room, and a lot of Sanders supporters confused and also got very emotional. As soon as she was nominated, though, these dozens of delegates on the floor marched out of the convention. They marched across the street to the media tent, had a horde of reporters following them, chanting, just to go to jail, Hillary. Some had duct tape across their mouths with the words silenced written across them. For the second day in a row, George, Bernie Sanders has overshadowed Hillary at this convention.
Will he do it for the rest of the week, Joe? That's what we got to see. Thank you so much. In a moment, by the way, Dick Morris, who spent years working with the Clintons, joins us to talk about his latest work, Armageddon. You've heard that on our program before. Of course, it's put out by Newsmax.com. So Dick will be with us in just a few minutes here. Some more news, of course. One of the two knife-wielding Islamist attackers who slit the throat of a Catholic priest during a morning mass in northern France was under judicial supervision after trying to travel to Syria twice under false names. They allowed this guy to be deactivated from his little bracelet for a couple hours every morning. It was during this period he decided to go out and kill the priest with a friend of his, Jerry Corsi, with us. Jerry, this is getting a little too far, isn't it?
It's horrific, George. It's like every day there's another terrorist attack in Europe. And this one, I mean, the idea of killing an 84-year-old priest, and this is near Normandy. It's not in Paris, where, you know, Paris has a large number of Muslim residents. And this is really a bizarre situation and completely horrific. But I think what's happening is Europe is becoming aware of the heightened danger of radical Islamic terrorism, and I don't think it's possible to deny any longer that there's a real threat.
There really is. And why France all the time? France is getting hit like crazy.
Well, George, France has probably got the largest number of Muslims You remember, of course, with, you know, the Algeria, France has a long history of colonial involvement in northern Africa and has a large number of Muslims that have been coming to France for decades. And now the influx from the Middle East of the current refugees adds to that number. But France probably has the largest number of Muslims in Europe. And with the recent additions, you know, this 19-year-old who wanted to go to Syria, you've got a real radicalization going on of the Muslims who have been there, even those who have been there for a long time in France.
All right, Jerry, thank you, by the way. I saw your review on our book, Night Talk. It was wonderful. You did a great job.
Well, George, I really enjoyed the book, and I hope the review reflects it. It was spellbinding. It's a great science fiction thriller, and it reflects your show. It's about a, as you write about, a Los Angeles night host of a paranormal show. But I've got to tell you, George, it's really fascinating. It was page-turning because you wove in so many themes from coast to coast, but your ability to understand and really convey what we're going into with this NSA government watchful society and where it could end and mixing it with extraterrestrials. I mean, anyone who likes Coast to Coast AM, I think, is going to find, can't wait for the movie of your book. It's going to want to read the novel, Night Talk, and then can't wait for the movie. And, George, I'm looking forward to the sequel.
Okay, my friend. Thank you very much, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Yuri Del Harris, better known as Miss Cleo, the pitch woman for the Psychic Readers Network, has died of cancer.
Don't you really want to know?
Okay, I was wondering who the father of my baby was.
All right, let's take a look. The Miss Cleo DNA test. I'm solely searching for the father of your baby. Oh, it's the one that's very unpleasant, okay?
Okay.
And he's also the one that had another girlfriend while he was sleeping with you.
Yes, he did.
Yep, that's him. That's the daddy.
Okay.
But you knew that?
I wasn't sure.
I don't know how. The baby looks just like him.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, so you were in denial because he has a funny little chin, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, and the baby have that same little chin.
Oh, my God.
Whew. The cards can reveal things that you will never see by yourself. Call me now for your free tarot reading.
Miss Cleo, dead at the age of 53. In a moment, Dick Morris joins us. We're going to talk with him about a lot of things that are going on, and his latest book is out, Armageddon. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dick Morris with us, and of course, many of you know Mr. Morris. He is been a political consultant, still does some of that. He's become well-known for his insightful, hard-hitting commentary. He's all over the place. He's got a number of books out, including his latest, Armageddon, How Trump Can Beat Hillary. Now, I want to make this perfectly clear on this program. I'm not endorsing any of these candidates at all. I don't want you to send me emails saying you're ganging up on Hillary, you're ganging up on Trump. Not at all. We're just trying to bring you information. Not endorsing Hillary, the libertarian Mr. Johnson, or Trump. But I want to bring you information so you can make up your own mind when you go into that election room on November 8th. Dick Morris with us on Coast to Coast. Dick, I've admired your work for years.
Well, George, I've slept through yours for years.
And Dick has been scheduled today to talk about futurism, but so much is going on right now, and your book just came out. I've got to spend some time talking with you and getting your reaction to all of this.
It's now number one.
It sure is.
Nonfiction hardcover.
It sure is. And your publisher out at Newsmax, Chris Ruddy, is a great guy. I've known him for years.
Oh, you have. Good.
Now, I got to ask you this. In spite of what we're going to talk about Hillary right now, to be the first woman to get nominated by a major political party, that's quite an accomplishment, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it certainly is. And I celebrate the first woman running. It's just Hillary I have a problem with. And in that one statement, you have so much about her candidacy. Hillary always is more attractive in the generic than in the specific. You know, the first woman, the first woman to run, the first ward, the second woman, or third woman, I guess, Secretary of State. In each of her roles, the generic, the historic, is significant. but it's she who's the letdown. And I think that when you look at her candidacy, when you look at the convention and what's emerging here, that's the whole. You have a complete picture otherwise, a bunch of positions that are good, a bunch of supporters that are good, an achievement record that has its positive points. But then in the middle is this glaring opening, which is that Hillary just isn't up to it. It is an inauthentic model of feminism to proceed in your husband's steps, where she became a partner at the Rose Law Firm when he became governor. She got in charge of the health care task force when he was elected president, and she defended him against Jennifer Flowers. Defending him as a result of Lewinsky earned her a Senate seat that Bill basically cleared the way so that she would win without a primary. And each of these achievements is basically derivative. I wrote a book called Condi versus Hillary, contrasting a person who I thought might be a great first president, Condoleezza Rice, mm-hmm. who made everything herself and pulled herself up by her own bootstraps.
I actually thought Trump should have named her as his VP running mate.
He tried to.
Ah.
He tried to, but Condi wasn't interested.
Okay.
But his people were actively talking. He was actively talking to them. But listen, my basic point about Hillary is that she... You ever known somebody, George, when they were 30, who had certain tendencies that alarmed you and concerned you, where it kind of went off the rails a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't that bad. And by the time they're 60 or 70, they're enormous. They've really sort of taken over the person's personality. And the Hillary Clinton and the Bill Clinton that I worked with in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, were very different than the Bill and Hillary Clinton out there now.
I was going to say, you must have liked something about them because you stayed with them so long.
I still think that Bill was a good president from the neck up.
Yeah.
And I like him, and I like his record, and I'm very proud of his record. But back then, they were not materialistic. Money didn't much matter to them. Campaign contributions, but not actual luxury.
Mm-hmm.
But years in the White House and years in the governor's mansion changed them and made them into very materialistic people who I believe fundamentally were corrupt in the way they handled her tenure as Secretary of State. Bill Clinton went around the world giving speeches and getting fees, which were basically thinly disguised bribes. And, I mean, it's nice to have Bill Clinton speak to your audience, but you're not going to pay $1 million for it. And they made $220 million in speaking fees.
Did they leave the White House broke, as she said?
Well, maybe cash broke, but she had a $14 million book contract in her pocketbook.
Okay.
So I wouldn't call that
broke. That's not broke.
And an advance on that of $7 or $8 million. But the point is that when they left office, this marriage that began as a romance, which it was in the 70s and 80s, and then became a partnership in the 90s, became a RICO, a racketeering organization, on a massive, massive scale, where dozens of foreign countries and dozens of corporations that needed special favors, the Keystone Pipeline to be approved, a sale of uranium reserves to Russia, rehabilitation of Dubai and UAE and the international community, in economic development in Saudi Arabia, all kinds of stuff, business and nuclear advantages for India, all kinds of needs that the politicians and the businesses and the countries had. And the solution was always invite Bill Clinton, pay him millions of dollars to give a speech or two or three, and then Hillary will follow with the favors from the State Department. And this became a massive, massive operation. When I knew them, they wanted money to get power, things like campaign contributions.
Right.
Now they want power to make money.
Is she, in your opinion, Dick, qualified to be president? Hold on to that, because we're going to take this break. We're going to come right back. Dick Morris with us. His latest book, it's out. It's called Armageddon. It is zooming to number one. It's number one on Amazon already. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dick Morris with us for the first couple hours tonight. We'll take calls next hour as well as we continue talking with him about his latest work, Armageddon. He's also talking about futurism. We're going to talk about that with him a little bit later on as well on Coast to Coast, and I'll be back with Dick in just a second. But let me tell you something about our Asheville, North Carolina live event. It is August 27th in Asheville, North Carolina. Full information at coasttocoastam.com. You simply click the picture of the Asheville event. It'll take you there. People are picking out their seats now. It's kind of neat watching all those seats go away every day. But just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and click the Asheville, North Carolina event. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dick Morris with us. His latest work, of course, is called Armageddon. The subtitle, How Trump Can Beat Hillary. But Dick, in your opinion, is she qualified to be president?
She certainly has the credentials, and she certainly has the experience to do that, and the intellect to do it. But it depends on whether you consider character and truth-telling and administrative competence as essential elements of being president. She flunked her first test as commander-in-chief. Very rarely does a potential president have the ability to have a dry run at being commander.
Right.
And she did in Benghazi. She was so busy trotting the world that she didn't pay any attention to the warnings, even when the British ambassador was almost assassinated and the Brits pulled their consulate out of Benghazi. She didn't reinforce it, despite Stephen's pleas. And when the raid started, she did nothing to defend it, to send in reinforcements. She is a compulsive serial liar. The lie, I did not send or receive classified documents, lives right alongside of, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Her corruption has approached unbelievable proportions. Vladimir Putin wants to buy 20% of the uranium reserves in the United States. The State Department personnel object because that's a strategic commodity,
right,
and we're not self-sufficient in uranium. They urge Hillary to reject it, and the Secretary of State has that power. Then Putin invites Bill to give a speech in Moscow, pays him $1 million,
gets
deposited in Hillary's account, and 4 months later, Hillary rules in favor of the sale, despite the almost unanimous opposition of her advisors. Her whole approach to the problems that we face as a country is basically just the same stuff that's been going on under Obama. There's no departures, there's no imagination, there's nothing new about it. And I believe that it makes no difference that she's left or right, or Democrat or Republican. What matters to me, and I think matters to most voters, is are you an insider or an outsider? Are you part of that tiny little group that runs the world, the global economy, the IMF, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve, and European Union? That's the innermost circle. Then you have their acolytes and supporters around them, and then you have the biggest circle, concentric circle, those of us who are being screwed by the global economy and who have no voice in how it runs. And ultimately, it doesn't matter if you're one of the Bushes or one of the Clintons or one of the Romneys. You're still in that inner circle. And I believe that the Trump candidacy, the Sanders campaign, and I consulted on it, the Brexit campaign in Britain, was all the revolt of the outsiders. You had an ad on just a minute ago on your station about the possibility of depositors having to pay for bailouts.
Yeah.
That is a very real threat. The European Union decided that when Cyprus banks fell apart, rather than have the taxpayers bail them out by lending money in the name of the EU, the depositors would get what they call a haircut, and then a third of their accounts would be seized and used to bail out the banks as if they were stockholders who'd invested money. They ruled that depositors and stockholders were interchangeable. Congress just recently passed legislation spearheaded by the administration and endorsed by Hillary that said that if the pension funds fail, that those for people like the Teamsters Union, in other words, people who have multiple employers, before an ERISA, the pension insurance place runs out of money and it has very low reserves, the next step will be to reduce the pensions of people actually receiving the pensions, old people who are retired, rather than have to bail out the pension fund. And it is inevitable, I believe, that if we hit another crisis, which I think we will, it is depositors who are going to be called upon to pay, almost as if it was before we had deposit insurance. That kind of insider game, and the European Union, by the way, pioneered the in that. That kind of insider game is typical of what goes on in Washington. And I think Trump is standing up outside of those circles and protesting and saying that we're not going to let this happen. We're not going to be led around by the global economy and Europe. We're going to stand up for Americans and speak for their rights and for what they what we all believe in. You ask, is Hillary qualified? She's a bureaucrat. She's an insider.
Mm-hmm.
She'll always have 15 different options on 12 different legal pads, paralysis by analysis. Whereas Trump is a guy of action. I've known Trump, you know, since my childhood.
Do you like him?
Yes, I do, immensely. My father was his lawyer, and I've known him since I was a kid. And he's not an ideologue. He's not a leftist or a rightist. I think the social conservatives will be a little disappointed. I think that he's a builder. His job is get it done. Get the damn thing built. Stop talking about it. Just give me the damn ball and let me do it. And that is his attitude towards stuff, whereas Hillary is ponderous, never departs much from the status quo, and ultimately is in complete hock to the banks that run the country and the world. When Bill was in the White House, for 7 years, people wanted to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act. Glass-Steagall says, if we're going to insure your deposits, you can't gamble with the money. You can have to invest it in very safe, conservative investments. And the bank said, hell no, free us. We want to make mucho money in these derivatives and debt instruments and collateralized debt obligations. Free our hands. And Clinton and the Democrats all said no. Then in 1999, when he knew he was going to lose his law license in the Paula Jones lawsuit, he signed legislation eliminating Glass-Steagall. And the next year, banning regulation on derivatives. The two things the bank wanted more than anything else in the world. And then he proceeded for the next few years to take tens of millions of dollars from Goldman Sachs and the same banks that he had just bestowed this largesse on. And when the crash of 07 and 08 happened, it was directly responding to the Glass-Steagall repeal. Had that not been repealed, these banks would not have been invested in this kind of crap,
right.
And this crash would not have happened. And then when Hillary wants to choose a vice president, Kane, instead of what you usually do when you're on a VP list, which is keep your mouth shut and smile, sent a letter to the banks saying, I am against reinstating Glass-Steagall, and I'm against any new regulation of the banks. Why did he send the letter? So that the banks would get a hold of Hillary and saying, hey, we want this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm. It did work.
So is she qualified? Yeah. But should she be president? Hell no.
If you were running Trump's campaign right now, what would you be telling him?
To reach out to the Bernie Sanders voters. I use a metaphor in my book. The right jab, which has been the staple of the Republican Party, is effective. Social issues, immigration, Obamacare, the terrorism, all that stuff is effective. But use the left hook also. Go around with your left hand and appeal to the Bernie Sanders voters. Talk about the issues in just the same way that I've just been doing. Run against Hillary as an insider, not just as a liberal and not just as a Democrat. And run against the fundamentally anti-democratic nature of the global economy. If I could move just a touch into futurism.
Yeah.
We're facing a huge economic, moral, and political crisis in the world, which is that the demands of capitalism and the power of democracy are on a collision course, because we're headed toward a jobless future. We talk about bringing the manufacturing jobs home. I think that's baloney. I think Trump is way over-exaggerating that. Ultimately, it's all going to be done by robots. And when we bring the jobs home, it's a matter of American robots doing it as opposed to Chinese robots doing it. And the number of people working in manufacturing is going to be like farming. It'll be like 1% or 2% of the population, and they'll make more than enough for the entire world. And increasingly, robots are going to have the technical ability to take over huge numbers of positions and jobs that people now do. And capitalism is going to say, oh, goody, let's hold down costs, let's maximize profits, let's automate wherever we can. And democracy is going to say, hey, wait a minute, how are we going to make a living? You go into this future, how's anybody going to succeed?
And who's going to buy these things if we're all out of work?
Yeah, exactly. And there'll be a few people who'll make money at the top, but increasingly the income disparities will loom. And democracy is going to raise hell about that. And I think that ultimately that conflict, but we used to ask, can China be capitalist if it isn't democratic? You know, if there isn't free flow of information and private ownership of property. Well, the question I think will be, can America be capitalist if it's democratic?
Why isn't the media jumping on these issues? And I'm talking about mainstream, Dick. Why aren't they jumping on these issues?
They don't know enough. It's not that they're biased in the sense. They are Democrats, they are liberals, and all of that. But they just don't understand this stuff. I was on MSN, on CNBC earlier today, and a guy named Brian and a guy named Tyler were interviewing me. And they got it. They understood it. We were talking about a jobless future and the robotic revolution. But they're specialists in that. The average host, the average anchor, doesn't have the faintest idea what I'm talking about when I go into this. And they just don't understand it. And, you know, ultimately, you look at the French Revolution, where the demands of the upper class left the rest of the country starving, and it led to this cataclysmic revolution. I think we're headed to something like that. Unless we temper the unfettered power of these central banks and these central capitalist institutions and make them take account of human needs and our national interests. The reason I worked on the Brexit campaign, I was one of the consultants that helped do that. And they voted against the European Union because they didn't want these unelected people, responsible to nobody, self-perpetuating, making all the decisions for them. The European Parliament can't introduce a bill there.
Yeah.
Can't do anything. It's totally fictitious and a facade. And there is no elected head of the European Union. It's all a bunch of people who know better than we do, who are going to tell us how to live. Same thing with the United Nations. Same thing with all of these multinational agencies, the IMF, the World Bank, and the Federal Reserve Board. And you need to have a president that's going to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute. I want you to govern in the name of the American people. I want you to make decisions that put our country and its people first. Even if your cafe society in Paris doesn't approve of it.
That would be nice.
And, you know, George, you talk about terrorism, that Normandy thing.
Horrible.
Do you think that it hasn't occurred to every single man, woman, and child in France, oh, my God, I wish we hadn't let these people in the first place?
They're all saying that now.
All saying that.
Yeah.
And we're in the process of letting them in. If Hillary is elected, there will be about 5 million more people from terror-sponsoring nations, Muslim, Shmuslim, I don't care what their religion is, if they come from Iraq and Syria and Saudi Arabia and UAE and a bunch handful of countries, they should not be allowed in the United States, period. And do you think that the people in France wished that 20 and 30 years ago and 10 years ago somebody had stood up and said the exact same thing that Trump is saying now? And are they ruining the day when they followed the advice that Hillary's giving of, oh, open borders because we're an open ecumenical country? Nonsense. So that's all the Trump candidacy. So is she qualified to be president? Well, you answer that.
The polls show that Donald is starting to increase after being behind. Of course, everybody gets a bump during their conventions, and I assume after this one is done, Hillary will get her bump. If you had to make a decision right now, not based on who you prefer, but based on what you think could happen, who do you think would win?
Well, I think at this point it would be no worse than 50-50.
It's that close, isn't it?
That close. But there's a bomb that could explode in the middle of the election that would totally change everything. Russia hacked the emails of the Democratic National Committee.
They sure did.
And it's releasing it piece by piece. Do you think it hacked the emails of Hillary's private server?
I bet it did.
And if they release those emails in October, and it's evident that they were hacked and that Hillary turned over every secret we have to the Russians and probably the Chinese and possibly the Iranians and the North Koreans too, do you think she can get elected president?
Nope. Not at all. Interesting timing, isn't it? And by the way, in August, our friend Jerry Corsi, who you heard right before
who
you
love,
came on.
By the way, he's brilliant.
He's got a book coming out in August called Partners in Crime about the foundation. And that could blow
the
lid
off. The foundation was essentially a holding company to pay their staff, their overhead, their travel, and everything about them. I'm glad that now the FBI is investigating it, and Corsi is a one-man FBI.
He really is. Do the Clintons hate you now?
I don't know. They send me a Christmas card every year, George, but there's white powder on it, so I don't open it.
Don't open it. Don't open it. But in the beginning, when you started working with them, did you like them?
Yes, and I continued to like Bill. In fact, the differences between Bill and Hillary are enormous, and anybody who knows the two of them knows that. At the moment, they're obfuscated because Bill wants her to be president because it'll continue their little game going and the little corrupt stuff they've been doing. But I'll tell you a story. In 1996, we were preparing for the Democratic Convention. This is from my book. And there was a birthday party for Bill at Radio City Music Hall. And a whole bunch of ACT-UP demonstrators, pro-gay demonstrators, disrupted the dinner and were yelling and screaming, and cops had to take them out. So the next day, I was in the White House with Hillary, and she said, were you at that dinner? And I said, yeah. And she said, did you see those demonstrators? Yeah, I did. Well, do you think they paid to get in? Those were $1,000 seats. Do you think they could afford $1,000 each? I said, no, I guess not. And she said, the Republicans paid for it. The Republicans brought them in, bought them those tickets, and put them there, and they're going to do the same thing during our convention. I'm going to get up to speak, Bill's going to get up to speak, and they're going to be demonstrating, and that's all the media will cover, just like Chicago 1968. I want Social Security checks, FBI background checks, fingerprinting, photo IDs, retinal scans for everybody who is in that audience. And I knew enough then just to sort of nod my head. And the next day I was in the Oval with Bill. And I said, you know, Hillary was on a jihad about this. And Bill said, don't worry, I'm not going to do that, S.H.
Wow. I've got to tell you, did Bill almost punch you out once?
Yeah. And it led to a very revealing moment. He and I were in the governor's mansion with Hillary. And it was late at night, midnight, and we both had tough days. And Bill was running for his last term as governor and was very upset with how the race was going. And he got red in the face and screamed and began cursing at me and saying what, you know, calling me everything in the world. And
Beep.
I got really upset also, and I stormed out of the mansion. And I said, go lose this election on your own. I'm out of here. Get lost. And F you. And I hear these hoofbeats behind me, and it's Bill. And he grabbed me from behind, tackled me, and drew his fist back to punch me.
Oh,
and Hillary grabbed his arm, pulled him off, and said, Bill, stop. Think of what you're doing. Stop. And Bill stopped. He kind of sputtered, and I ran out of the mansion. And she ran after me and put her arm around me and walked me around the grounds and said, calm down, Dick, calm down. He didn't mean it. And then she said these lines that I've remembered ever since. He only does this to people he loves.
Dick, stay with us. We're going to come back and talk about futurism and take some phone calls with you. Dick Morris with us right here on Coast to Coast AM.